The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Welcome to the Lunchtime Doctor. We say good afternoon to Dr. Brittany Dean.
Good afternoon, Bass. It's great to be in studio today. And we are going to be talking about a topic that we usually touch on almost every day here. And today, or this month rather, is Diabetes Awareness Month. Okay. So we will be talking about diabetes. We will be taking all your questions and concerns. And yeah, we're talking about diabetes today, but of course you can ask your questions, ask or Colleen, and we can have a conversation
On any topic. Of course, the numbers to call are 625-2257. A lot of people may have that number on speed dial, 625-2257. And feel free to WhatsApp us at 306-1065. And since we're listening on Sangeet and Sky 99.5, you can message them there and they will send the numbers to us right here in studio. So we start off with the question, what is diabetes and how can you explain the difference between, we always hear about type 1 and type 2 and gestational diabetes?
Yeah, so diabetes is one of those chronic health conditions, and we are definitely seeing a rise in diabetes these days in Trinidad and worldwide. Now, what diabetes actually is, like I said, it's a chronic medical condition, and what happens to the body is that it is unable to process our blood glucose or our blood sugar. So that entire process becomes impaired. Now, glucose is important and essential because, well, it is our energy. It's what fuels our body's cells. But in order for it to reach into our body's cells, it requires a hormone, insulin, and that hormone is made by the pancreas. So that is how glucose is able to enter our cells and our tissues, because of the use of this insulin hormone. Now, there are different types of diabetes. Most commonly, we definitely do see type 1, type 2, and gestational diabetes. But there are other types of diabetes that are less common, but we'll talk about the more common ones. Now, in terms of type 1 diabetes, this is a form of diabetes that is autoimmune. And when we're talking autoimmune, now the body, essentially in autoimmune diseases, the body starts to attack itself. So the body's immune system mistakenly attacks and destroys the insulin producing cells in the pancreas. So insulin is produced by the pancreas. In type 1 diabetes, our body's immune system attacks these cells in the pancreas that produces insulin. So as a result of that, the body is no longer producing insulin, or it's producing very little insulin. And that causes glucose to accumulate within the bloodstream. And instead of it being utilized by the cells, it is just staying in the bloodstream because there's no insulin to allow it to go into our cells and tissues to be used as energy. And type 1 diabetes, we usually get this, or we usually see it in childhood or adolescence, although it can develop at any age. And unfortunately, people with type 1 diabetes, they require insulin every single day. So if you know somebody with type 1 diabetes, you would see them having their insulin injection on hand, because they do have to take their insulin every day to allow the glucose that they are consuming to go into the cells instead of staying within the bloodstream itself. Now, type 2 diabetes is a little bit different, and this is actually the most common form of diabetes, and about 90 to 95% of all diabetic cases is type 2 diabetes. Now, in type 2 diabetes, the cells of our body, so the cells in our tissues, the cells in our muscles, it becomes resistant to insulin, meaning that the receptors on these cells no longer is responding to the insulin being on it to let the glucose in the bloodstream be let into our cells and tissues. So the glucose cannot enter our cells easily, And eventually, what tends to happen is the same case like in type 1 diabetes, the pancreas eventually can't produce enough insulin to meet the body's needs. And this type of diabetes, type 2 diabetes, this is actually linked to our lifestyle. And, you know, the poor diet, the lack of exercise, obesity, all of these things lead to type 2 diabetes. Although, you know, genetics do play a small role in that as well. And unlike type 1 diabetes, type 2 diabetes can sometimes be managed with the lifestyle changes and even some oral medications. Although when it becomes very complicated and you go into the later stages, these people will also require insulin because remember their pancreas no longer is producing enough insulin to meet the demands of the body. And even though type 1 is autoimmune, type 2 actually has more of a family history, meaning that that plays a much bigger role in somebody developing diabetes. So type 2 is more, you have more of a risk if your mother or your father has type 2 diabetes. And, you know, we can speculate and say it's because the eating habits can be the same, the lifestyle habits can be the same. Now, the third type, which is a little less common than type 1 and type 2, would be gestational diabetes. And this actually occurs around pregnancy in women. And it's typically, we see it in the second or the third trimester. And what happens is that the placenta produces certain hormones that makes the mother's cells more resistant to insulin. Most cases usually resolve after the baby has been delivered. But women who do experience gestational diabetes, they do have a higher risk of developing diabetes later on in life. And gestational diabetes is carefully managed to protect both the mother and the baby, often using dietary adjustments, exercise, sometimes medications that are safe in pregnancy for women to use.
Mm-hmm. All right, definitely. In terms of, but when you, like, you, they say you're pre-diabetic, what will be, you know, like that situation?
So we're actually going to come to that later on in the program. But pre-diabetes, there are values attached to it in terms of HbA1c, in terms of looking at your fasting blood glucose levels. And what this really means is that your body is becoming resistant to insulin. It's not quite there yet, meaning that you know, once you change your lifestyle, your diet, your exercise, you lose a little weight, you build some muscle, all of these things can combat pre-diabetic people. But if you leave it untouched, then it's going to develop into full-blown type 2 diabetes.
All right. So who is most at risk for the developing diabetes? And are there specific genetic, lifestyle, or environmental factors that contribute?
So the risk factors for diabetes, it's going to be dependent on the type. And we're talking about type 1, type 2, and gestational here. Now, when we go into type 1, remember that one is the autoimmune condition where our body's immune system is attacking the cells that produce insulin in the pancreas. Now, the exact cause of type 1 diabetes is unknown, but we do speculate that genetics and environmental factors will likely play a role. Now, having a family history of type 1 diabetes or certain genes may actually increase somebody's risk of developing type 1 diabetes, even though this particular form of diabetes is less directly linked to somebody's lifestyle. There are also some viral infections that can trigger an immune response that leads to type 1 diabetes in persons who are genetically predisposed to type 1 diabetes. But like I said, we usually see this specific type of diabetes more in childhood and adolescence because they will develop a lot of these symptoms much earlier because their body is not producing insulin as it should. Now, when we're talking about type 2 diabetes, remember this is very much linked to our lifestyle, our dietary habits, our exercise habits every single day. So we do have risk factors, which will include a family history. Like I said before, if you have a parent or a sibling with type 2 diabetes, your risk is going to increase. And yes, there are genes that make you more susceptible, but speculating, we usually speculate that because your family has a certain set of dietary rules and habits, you are more likely to follow, you know, those same dietary habits, that same sedentary lifestyle. We are not saying that if your mother has type 2 diabetes, you 100% are going to get it, especially if you live a healthier lifestyle, you have better dietary habits, you have a proper exercise regime every day. And obesity is also a risk factor that we look at. So excessive fat, particularly the fat that is surrounding the abdomen, that has actually been known to increase somebody's insulin resistance. And of course, the sedentary lifestyle, like I mentioned, that physical inactivity is a big major contributor, as of course it will increase somebody's risk of obesity and insulin resistance as well. And later on, we will see how physical activity is used to help combat type 2 diabetes as well. Age is also a factor that we have to look at. Your risk will increase as you age, especially after the age of 45, even though we are definitely seeing it increasingly more in younger persons. So we are seeing younger persons, even in primary school, being diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, even though type 1 is supposed to be more common in that age group. And it really is a lot about the lifestyle these children are living now. You know,
I know kids are not as active sometimes as they may be.
No, so you definitely don't see children running around. You don't see children at play parks anymore. Everything has, you know, we have technological advancement, so a lot of people spend time on the computers, spend time watching TV as opposed to going outside and being active. And that is how children maintain their energy levels, and that is how they continuously remain active, by actually playing. But if we sort of, you know, if we hinder them from doing that, we are definitely going to see an increase in these comorbidities like type 2 diabetes, especially if we couple that with the amount of sugars that children eat now, the amount of refined carbohydrates, the soft drinks and the juices, all these different things have a lot of sugar in it. So we will see an increase in type 2 diabetes, especially among the youth. And ethnicity, certain ethnic groups as well, African Americans, Hispanic Americans, Natives, Asians, all of these carry a higher risk of developing diabetes.
But why is that though? Is it because of the diet as well? Why is that?
So in Trinidad, we do see East Indians actually being diagnosed with diabetes more, but we do see Africans being diagnosed with hypertension more. And it could be some sort of genetic predisposition in these ethnic groups, but we definitely do know that in terms of a normal East Indian breakfast, you'd have things like roti or doubles, or, you know, a lot of the fried foods, the aloo pies, the pilori, all of these things are refined carbohydrates. So it is going to increase your risk of diabetes in the long run. It is going to increase your risk of obesity. And it is definitely, it will lead to other comorbidities if we don't change our diet and we don't have proper physical activity throughout the day. High blood pressure and high cholesterol, definitely we do see that in combination with diabetes. If somebody is diagnosed with diabetes, more than likely we do see high blood pressure and high cholesterol in that person as well. These conditions will often accompany diabetes and are also associated with insulin resistance. Now, in terms of gestational diabetes, the diabetes you'll get during pregnancy because of the placental hormones and all that, there are certain risk factors that we also look at in pregnant women. If they have advanced maternal age, so over 35 years of age, if you're becoming pregnant, you are at risk for gestational diabetes. If you are overweight or obese during pregnancy, if you have a personal or a family history of diabetes, and if you do have a history of polycystic ovarian syndrome. So diabetes, we are definitely seeing the risk factors will be dependent on the type of diabetes, and most commonly with type 2 diabetes, it is related to our lifestyle factors.
All right, let's take a break here and get some questions in. Remember, 625-2257. Give us a call, 625-2257. WhatsApp us at 306-1065. We're live here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangeet 106.1 and Sky 99.5. And remember, even though we're talking diabetes, you could message us with any of your questions. So let's go with question number one here. Could some medication prescribed by doctors affect my liver or kidneys? Example, metformin.
So in terms of metformin, there's no particular correlation between liver disease and kidney disease, but there are other medications that will be prescribed that will have an effect on your liver and kidneys. And usually your doctor will tell you about the side effects, and they will give you a stipulated time frame. So even over-the-counter medications will have an effect on your liver. If you've ever noticed, you know, in acetaminophen, those pouches, what tends to happen is that if you take over a stipulated amount of the medication, you are putting yourself at risk for liver toxicity. So a lot of these medications do have side effects that affect different organs of the body. But metformin, if you're prescribed metformin, you are going to be prescribed a specific dose of metformin. And the dose is usually in the therapeutic range, meaning that is the dosage that is required for you to get the maximum effect of that particular drug for whatever you are going through. So metformin is for diabetes. So you will be prescribed how much ever dosage the doctor wants to give you without having a risk coupled with that. So yes, there are medications with, you know, toxicity of the liver, kidneys, other parts of the body, but usually all these medications are recommended within its therapeutic range. And that is why you are supposed to follow the instructions given to you by your doctor, because you're not supposed to take more or less than the medications prescribed.
WhatsApp message here.
Doc, afternoon. I just wanted to find out, I know the pancreas is create the insulin, right? But what causes the pancreas not to create insulin? Is it because of age, or is it like if you're, let's say, 60 years, just pancreas supposed to be creating insulin no matter what? So could you tell me why the pancreas don't create the insulin that it's supposed to? Thanks.
So now, in terms of the pancreas not creating the insulin, that would be in type 1 diabetes. And the exact cause of that, we actually don't know why some people are more susceptible. But there are certain genes or certain genetic susceptibilities that these persons may have. Now, we call it an autoimmune disease, meaning that any autoimmune disease, and there are several of them out there, means that your body or your body's immune system starts to attack itself. So in type 1 diabetes, the body's immune system starts to attack the pancreas, or particularly the beta cells of the pancreas that is supposed to produce insulin. Why this person has this particular autoimmune disease, we do not know the exact cause. But like I said, we are speculating that it can be environmental or certain genetic susceptibilities. So if you have a family history of it, it's not 100% that you are going to get it, but it can increase your risk of developing type 1 diabetes. Now, in type 2 diabetes, when the body or when the insulin or the body becomes resistant to insulin, or the cells are no longer responding to the insulin, our pancreas becomes overloaded in layman's terms, right? And what tends to happen is that it no longer can produce enough insulin to meet the demands of the body, meaning our blood sugar becomes so high and our body is no longer responding to this insulin. So the pancreas is essentially saying, well, this is too much work for me, so I can't produce anymore. And that is when people with type 2 diabetes, that's in the later stages, when they have to take insulin, like type 1 diabetics.
Mm-hmm. All right, so what are some of the early warning signs and symptoms of diabetes, and what should people really look out for?
So the symptoms of diabetes, they can develop very gradually, especially in type 2, or if the person has type 1 diabetes, it actually becomes very sudden. So that is how we tend to catch it very quickly in young children and adolescents, because type 1 diabetes, you get the sudden symptoms. But type 2, it takes a few years to develop. And the most common things that we see would be, first, well, polyuria or frequent urination. So what happens to our body in type 2 diabetes? You have high blood glucose. Our glucose cannot go into our cells or into our tissues, so it remains in the blood. So we have high blood glucose, and what happens is that forces the kidneys to work harder or to filter and absorb the excess, and that would lead to more frequent urination. Now, if you're losing so much water or so much urine, that is going to lead to dehydration, and that is going to cause excessive thirst in a person with diabetes. And the cells can no longer get enough glucose because the glucose is staying in our bloodstream, right? But that is going to signal the body to take in more food, leading to persistent hunger. So if our cells are energy, we are going to feel hungrier. We are going to feel like we need more food for sustenance. And the cells are still unable to access this glucose for energy. So the body is going to feel low on energy. So the person is going to feel lethargic. They are going to feel fatigued. And some persons with diabetes, especially in type 1, they will have unexplained weight loss. And this is because the body is going to start to break down fat and muscle for energy when it cannot utilize the glucose. If somebody has high blood sugar as well, that can even affect the lens of the eyes, leading to blurred vision. And the high blood glucose can also impair our blood flow. And if it starts to impair our blood flow, that is going to impair our immune system, increasing the risk of infection. So you would notice that persons with diabetes, they will have slow healing wounds or slow healing sores, and they will even have frequent infections. And we always talk about this, you know, people will call in and ask about the numbness or the tingliness in their hands and feet. That is because that high blood glucose can also lead to nerve damage or neuropathy, causing numbness and tingling in the hands and the feet. And we usually call that a glove and stocking distribution. And that's very indicative of a person with diabetes, because they will feel that numbness in the hands and sometimes in the feet as well.
What about sometimes a dried mouth, or, well, you say the vision?
Yeah, so persons with type 2 diabetes, they will experience excessive thirst. And that, if they are not satiating themselves with water, they are going to feel dryness of the mouth. That excessive thirst is going to come from them losing so much water because their kidneys are being forced to filter more, and they will have frequent urination. So that is basically the gist of how it goes with persons who have diabetes. You will find yourself urinating frequently, feeling excessively thirsty and hungry, and feeling more lethargic than usual. And in the later stages, we start to see the blurred vision and the slow wound healing and the numbness and the tingling of the hands and the feet as well.
Right, and of course, if you do feel you know, that thirst and you're diabetic, you should not be drinking sugary drinks.
No, water. You definitely should be drinking water, mm-hmm. and you should be ensuring that you're taking your medication and coupling that with lifestyle changes as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, how is diabetes diagnosed and what tests are commonly used and how do they work?
So there are certain blood tests that we utilize in order to diagnose diabetes. So I'm just going to talk about each particular test, but it's important to know that, you know, certain tests, you have to have these symptoms with it, or you have to have certain readings on two or more occasions, etc. Now, the fasting blood glucose test, that blood glucose test is usually measured after an 8-hour fast. And if we see a reading of 126 milligrams per deciliter or more, that is usually indicative of diabetes. So if, you know, some people will say, well, the doctor told me not to eat before I came to the hospital to do my test. That is usually a fasting blood glucose test, right? And then there's another test that we do, the oral glucose tolerance test. We'd usually do this one for pregnant women, but, you know, sometimes we do it for the average person as well. So this test measures your blood glucose before and even 2 hours after drinking a sugary drink. And if we find that after those 2 hours post drinking that sugary drink that you have a reading of 200 milligrams per deciliter or more, that usually confirms diabetes. Then we have the A1C test or the glycated hemoglobin. That is the test that provides an average blood glucose level over the past 2 to 3 months. Nothing you do a day before this test or, you know, right before this test is really going to make a difference, because it is just going to provide an average of what have you been eating and drinking and how has your exercise been over the past 2 to 3 months. So an A1C level of 6.5% or higher usually signifies diabetes, while levels between 5.7 to 6.4 indicates pre-diabetes. So we were talking about pre-diabetes before. There are certain parameters for pre-diabetes as well. And then we have the random glucose. And that is if a person has symptoms and a random blood glucose reading of 200 milligrams or higher, diabetes may be diagnosed.
Call. Hello, good afternoon. Hello?
Hello?
Hello, good afternoon. Oh, we lost that one there. 625-2257. We give them a couple of minutes to call. 625-2257. Feel free to WhatsApp us at 306 as well. 1065. Remember, it's a lunchtime doctor. Today, Monday, heard on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangit 106.1, and Sky 99.5 FM. What are some of the common effects of diabetes on both, well, males and females? Is there any differences?
So in terms of, well, females, you will get the gestational diabetes. Males, because you have impairment in the blood flow, you know, you will usually have some sort of erectile dysfunction, especially if it becomes very complicated. But usually when we get into the short-term and long-term complications of diabetes, they tend to overlap for both males and females. But I think the main differences would be in our genital urinary system. So in males, you will get the erectile dysfunction. In females, because we're females, we have children, mm-hmm. Gestational diabetes will be a more common, will definitely be something for the females.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. So what are some short-term and long-term complications of unmanaged diabetes and how does it affect, well, various parts of the body, which one we just mentioned, of course.
Right. So uncontrolled diabetes, it will lead to severe complications because of that persistently high blood glucose. So we have the short-term complications, and the short-term would be things like hyperglycemia. So if the blood glucose remains too high, It could lead to dehydration, confusion, and even a life-threatening condition known as diabetic ketoacidosis, which we usually see more in type 1 diabetics. You can even have hypoglycemia, and that risk is particularly high with insulin use. So if somebody has low blood glucose, it can cause them to feel dizzy. You may even have confusion and sometimes loss of consciousness if left untreated. Now, that is a very dangerous thing. And that is why when somebody faints, you know, we look for a sugary drink to give them, or we look for a piece of candy or something to give them, because we are assuming that they are hypoglycemic and they can very easily go into a comatose state. Now, hyperglycemia, yes, you will have the complications from that, but it will give you a much slower rate of complications. Now, when we're talking about the long-term complications of diabetes, we have to look at how it affects each system of our body. So, in terms of cardiovascular disease or heart disease, high glucose levels or high blood sugar levels, that actually damages our blood vessels. So, that is going to raise your risk of developing heart attacks and strokes. And we definitely do see this in a lot of heart attack patients. When you look at their medical history, they do have a history of diabetes or high blood pressure as well. Neuropathy, this is how diabetes is going to affect the nerves. So nerve damage can cause a host of different symptoms. It can cause pain, tingling, numbness, especially in the feet area. And some people actually even lose all sensation in the feet. So we do have people coming in with what we term diabetic foot, meaning that they've gotten some sort of infection because they stepped on a nail and they didn't even know. And when you look at the x-ray, there's a nail straight up in the foot because they didn't feel it. And it really is something very dangerous when you stop feeling any sort of pain and any sort of sensation. Because remember, pain is our body's way of telling us this is dangerous, so stay away from it. So if you have a nail in your foot for a while, some people don't even recognize until it becomes very infected and they start to actually get the smell of that infection. Some people even get eye problems. So the blood vessel damage in the eyes can actually lead to blindness. So we have diabetics becoming blind at an alarming rate nowadays. And diabetes can even lead to kidney damage. We call that nephropathy. And that kidney damage can actually progress to kidney failure, meaning that some of these people may even require dialysis. And of course, we can't talk enough about the foot problems that some of these diabetics will face. So they will have poor circulation because, of course, remember, their blood vessels are becoming damaged and they are no longer having any sensation in the foot. So that is going to increase the risk of infections. And once it becomes very severe, once that infection has spread to the bone, or what we call osteomyelitis, that is going to lead to amputations. In fact, diabetes is the number one cause of non-traumatic amputations in the world. And it is also the number one cause of kidney disease. And it is also the number one cause of heart attacks. So we can see that diabetes is not something we should just take lightly. And I think that we as a country, I wouldn't say that we take it lightly, but I think it's just this person has diabetes. So, you know, it's something so common that we hear now, but we are not focusing on how detrimental it can be. And we are seeing now that diabetes is one of the most debilitating diseases somebody can be diagnosed with. And, you know, it can even lead to skin and mouth conditions. Diabetics are definitely more susceptible to infections and skin disorders because the immune system becomes compromised over a certain period of time.
All right, folks, do have a question coming in here. Hi, based on Dr. Britt, is there any medication to help tingling on my hand or feet? I am diabetic.
So there are certain over-the-counter things that you can try. B12 is very good for that nerve regeneration. And if you do experience any sort of tingling in the fingers or the toes, there are even over-the-counter medications you can take, like NeuroRubin, Fort, all these different things. But what I do suggest before you go and, you know, you go and you diagnose yourself, I definitely suggest you go to your physician, let them know that you're still experiencing certain symptoms of diabetes, even if you are on certain medications, and maybe they can tailor your dosages.
Well, hello, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, I've done this for the the kidney doesn't develop something called cyst. What is the treatment for this problem?
So, I didn't hear the full...
The kidney, does it develop something called cysts, and what is the treatment for it?
So, the kidney... You can develop a cyst almost everywhere in the body. We can just make that clear. But depending on what the cause of the cyst is, meaning is it an infection that causes it, more than likely, and is the infection something viral or bacterial? More than likely, it is bacterial. Depending on how large it is, you may require some drainage, and that is something... that is a surgical procedure. But if it's small, sometimes we may treat cysts with antibiotics, whether it be oral antibiotics or it can be intravenous. More than likely, it will be intravenous, especially if it is affecting the kidneys in a way that makes it very detrimental to the body. So cysts will have many different causes and depending on the treatment.
All right, another question here on WhatsApp. Good afternoon. I'm a 40-year-old female with a father who passed away due to diabetes-related issues. I check my blood sugar randomly with a HbA1c every 2 years. All tests come back fine, but as I'm getting older, should I check more regularly?
Once your tests are fine, it's not that you should check regularly. I definitely suggest that, you know, you ensure that your diet, your exercise regime, everything is on point. If it is not, then I do suggest that you amp up your testing to at least once a year or twice a year, especially because you have a family history of it.
Let's take a call. Hello, good afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Listen to you, please, and the doctor.
Good afternoon.
The doctor, listen to this. My neighbor wants to know something. You know, we're very educated because of the show, the program, education. Mm-hmm. He did a PSA, 1.7 is the reason.
Mm-hmm.
He is not diabetic, but he gets up in the night and passes urine about 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
Could you get a reading 1.7? I tell him, no, but I study this thing. Mm-hmm. I said, you can't have cancer. Can you have a reading of 1.7 and still have prostate cancer? Thanks again, and we listen up here.
More than likely, no. PSA is actually one of the only cancer markers that we actually can take into consideration to diagnose somebody with cancer. But of course, we have to do biopsies, all these different things in addition to the PSA. But if he's still urinating frequently, it could be that he has an enlarged prostate. So as you get older, as men get older, you are going to develop benign prostatic hyperplasia, meaning that you have an enlarged prostate, and that is going to cause a lot of urinary symptoms for you. And one of those symptoms is frequent urination and nocturia, which is urinating at night.
Mm-hmm. I went to the health center and got an HbA1c test. It read 5.9. They said that I am pre-diabetic. Mm-hmm. should I take medication or control it with diet and exercise?
So this is actually one of the questions that we have later on, but I'll just go into it now. So prediabetes will occur when your blood glucose levels are elevated but not high enough to be classified as diabetes. So in terms of your HbA1c, that's 5.7% to 6.4%. And this person is smack in the middle at 5.9%, right? It is a warning sign that type 2 diabetes may develop soon, but it can be managed and it can potentially actually be reversed with lifestyle changes such as healthy eating, increasing your physical activity and your weight management. So no, you do not yet require medication, but if you do not change your dietary habits, you do not increase your physical activity, you don't manage your weight, then it is going to develop into full-blown type 2 diabetes, in which you will eventually require medication. So right now you don't need it. Just try to get your eating on track, get your exercise on track, and manage your weight.
All right, 12 minutes away from 1 o'clock, folks. You're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor, Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangit 106.1 and Sky 99.5. Let's get a WhatsApp message.
Yeah, did the doctor speak about testing for diabetes through the urine and the urine test strips and so on?
So we can do a urine analysis, but that is not a confirmatory test. So we will see proteins and ketones and all these different things in the urine, which gives us an insight to, yes, you may be a diabetic, but then we have to do confirmatory tests, like the fasting blood glucose, the oral glucose tolerance test, the A1Cs, and the symptoms coupled with the random blood glucose test. So yes, the urine analysis is also, it's something that we routinely do for most patients anyways.
All right. How can, for those at risk, what are some of the best preventative measures that can take a lower chances of developing type 2 diabetes?
So if you're at risk for type 2 diabetes, meaning you are pre-diabetic, or you have a family history of diabetes, the main things that you should be focused on is healthy eating. So a balanced diet, one that is rich in fiber from your whole grains and certain fruits with a low glycemic index, your vegetables, anything to help regulate your blood glucose levels. Those are the things that you should be focusing on. And of course, you want to make sure that you have proper supplementation in there for your omega-3 fatty acids, your lean proteins, of course, your antioxidants from your berries or some citrus fruits, etc. And did you know blueberries and certain berries are actually some of the only fruits to not spike your insulin levels? That is actually a very good thing for most persons with diabetes. But of course, everything in moderation. You can't be eating about 2 cups of blueberries a day, you know? Physical activity as well. Exercise, brisk walking, strength training, all of those things actually increases insulin sensitivity. And what I mean by that is that it makes your insulin receptors more sensitive to the insulin so that it can open the door to let the glucose into the cells and the tissues. Now, weight loss as well. Even a 5 to 10% reduction in your weight can significantly reduce your diabetes risk. And monitoring. So you want to regularly monitor your blood glucose levels, and that will help you detect any changes early so that you can, you can make your moves to combat you getting type 2 diabetes.
All right, folks, 9 minutes away from 1 o'clock. So how is diabetes commonly managed, and what are some of the treatment options available?
So in terms of diabetes, the management is going to be dependent on the type and, of course, the severity of the condition. But It will typically involve a combination of lifestyle changes, medication monitoring, and sometimes insulin therapy. So in terms of lifestyle modification, for many people with type 2 diabetes, dietary changes, exercise, and weight management, that can make a world of a difference for those people. Monitoring your carbohydrate intake, opting for healthier options in terms of your whole grains, your vegetables, and your lean proteins, all of these things can help to regulate blood glucose levels.
Now let's take a call. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Very program, Doc.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for your educational program. But, Doc, you spoke about fruit.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that normally we grow up learning to eat tropical fruits because we're born in tropics.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So what can we use in place of this fancy blueberries?
You're right.
So please give us some local fruits. Thank you.
Okay. So there are. So what I would say is that we always look for fruits with a lower glycemic index. And what that means is that eating the fruits is not going to spike your blood glucose levels, right?
And even the mangoes, remember? The mangoes,
you want to stay away from the mangoes. Right. You want to stay away from the watermelons. You know what we could have? Green apple. So anything that is green, yeah, sure. You could eat the anything that is
nice
green.
And juicy.
Yeah, so certain five fingers, you know, if it's a little green, and even pomsite, if it's not too sweet, not the yellow ones, you know, we like to eat the yellow, the sweet pomsite. But in terms of the fruits, you any fruit that is green, yeah. I'm not saying to eat the unripe fruits, but you know we have fruits that green. Yeah, the fruits that green. I can't list all right now, but
somebody said West Indian cherries.
Oh, West Indian cherries. We have to look up. I don't know the glycemic index for all the different fruits. I just know that if you're diabetic, stay away from the mango, stay away from the watermelon. You can have the green apple, but let me say that, you know, if you want to enjoy a fruit, if you want to enjoy a mango, you need to also look at your portion sizes. You can't have a whole mango if you're diabetic. You can possibly have a face of a mango, or you can have, you know, a quarter of a mango. But a lot of these fruits that we actually look at, we tend to think if we eat one mango, that is one portion size. A mango is actually three or four portion sizes, depending on how big the mango is. And you know, we love to eat about four or five Julie mango in one go. So that is a no-no, especially for diabetics. But what you can do is look up low glycemic index fruits. And that is, you know, I can get some for tomorrow. And I'll bring it.
Yeah, somebody says here, the green fruits cause pain in my body.
You're probably pain. That's a bit of an odd one. I'm trying to figure out if they're eating the unripe fruits or the actual green fruits. You know, the fruits like the five finger that is a little less sugary than, it doesn't have as much fructose as other fruits.
Yeah, probably pain because they can't have the other good fruit.
Yeah, but you know.
All right, how can friends and family support someone living with diabetes? Let's say you're in a home. I always talk about this. In a home, everybody, you have to cook. You're diabetic, but everybody cooking this, you know, and drinking the sugary food and everything is a wrong, tempting you. How you as a diabetic can deal with that?
So having support from loved ones, that is going to be incredibly valuable for those who are managing diabetes. Because it can be a very demanding condition to manage. So if you know or you have a family member that is diabetic, you need to educate yourselves. So you need to learn about diabetes, and your friends and family can be able to, you know, you'll be able to better understand the challenges that this person with diabetes is facing. Knowing the symptoms of high and low blood sugar is also very important, because that is going to allow you to effectively respond in emergency situations. And assist with healthy lifestyle choices. You know, try to support healthy eating habits by preparing balanced meals, joining them in exercise routines, or choosing diabetic-friendly options when you're dining out together. And in the long run, this is going to be better for you too, because having a diabetic-friendly meal does not mean that, you know, you cannot indulge. I mean, especially if you're not diabetic, sure, have things in moderation. But in the long run, you should be eating a balanced diet every single day anyways. And encourage regular monitoring and appointments. So gently reminding your loved ones to monitor their blood glucose and to help and be with them to attend regular medical appointments so that they can help you can help them stay on top of their management plans and provide them with emotional support. Diabetes does not just affect you physically, but it can have an emotional and mental toll.
All right, our final question. We have just under 2 minutes. What resources are available for people with diabetes who are seeking support or more information? And let's say hi, Granata, Andrew Danu and the Diabetes Association.
Yes, exactly. So right down here, we have the Diabetic Association of Trinidad and Tobago. And they will provide a lot of research and resources in terms of diabetes. We also have the Health and Nutrition Association of Trinidad and Tobago that will provide you with resources and connect you with organizations that can help you manage your diabetes. And I'm actually the vice president of the Health and Nutrition Association of Trinidad and Tobago. We will be having a health fair on Saturday. So that's in Skinners Park. Come and get your blood glucose levels checked. We will have doctors to guide you accordingly. And, you know, you can even get some dietitians to help you create diet plans, etc. And if you are an online person, we have the American Diabetes Association that will offer a wealth of information on this topic. And we have the International Diabetes Federation. We have a lot of dietitians down here who's willing to educate you on these personalized guidance on your blood sugar management, diet, exercise, medication use, all these different things. And we even have local support programs and community health centers that can help you as well.
All right, folks, so that's been another edition of the Lunchtime Doctor.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability, the all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.